Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Witness in Peril by Jodi Bailey. A killer lies in wait, a witness in their sights. Being attacked after discovering her client's dead body sends estate lawyer Ivy Bridges running to the one man she thinks she can trust, her college ex, Special Agent Jacob Garcia. After arriving at his ranch with the daughter he doesn't know exists, Ivy finds Jacob just as hard as escaping the killers on her heels. Can Jacob keep them safe, even as enemies close in on all sides?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I have with me returning guests Jodi Bailey and Lori Wood. So, witness in peril. I'm going to guess there's a witness and she's in peril.
Good guess. Not at all. No.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
I have an estate lawyer, and she witnesses a murder when she goes to visit one of her clients. And so she runs to the only place that she thinks she can be safe, and that is to her ex-boyfriend, who works for the National Park Service as an investigator. But what he does not know is that she has a daughter who is his. So it threw a little extra twist into it that way.
Yeah.
So they're at the Grand Canyon, so that made it really fun.
Yeah. Now, have you been to the Grand Canyon?
I never have, but several years ago, I did a book with Irene. Who did I do a book with? I did a book with someone else. It's blanking right now. Sorry. It was set in the Grand Canyon. And so I went back with all that. And my husband, he's like a map guy. And he's helping me map out. He has the maps out and he's helping me map their route and where they're going. And, you know, this high and this, that. So it's kind of fun to just explore through him. So.
Yeah. We went there on our honeymoon to Sedona, Arizona, and then mm-hmm. 2 hours away. So we're going yes. there.
I spent a lot of time talking to a friend who had hiked rim to rim. She kind of helped me, you know, get everything right and read my scenes. And so that was a really big help.
So you have a series, three books right now, working on a fourth, Heroes of the Tundra. And for my listeners, you may catch Lori's accent. She is from Canada. So you can hear that a little in her voice, which I think is a lot of fun. And I guess Heroes of the Tundra, that's based in Canada as well. Am I correct in that?
Yes, it's based on the real town of Churchill, Manitoba. And Churchill is a small town sitting right on the border of the Arctic. And sits on the shore of Hudson Bay, which is leading to the Arctic Ocean, if you remember your geography from school at all. Oh. And actually, we named our new dog Hudson after my books. We got a pandemic puppy like everybody else. So all three of my books are set in Churchill, and it's the polar bear capital of the world. So when I was looking for a place to put an exciting romantic suspense series, I thought this is perfect because it's got everything. And so it's called Heroes of the Tundra, and each book is about a different couple. But the unifying thing for the series is that it's all set in Churchill.
Okay. So thank you. I'd love to go see the polar bears. Maybe not too close, but I can wave to them from a safe distance. Character development is kind of our theme for this podcast. And when you have a series, some authors take the same two characters and they develop them or their relationship through the series. But most romantic suspense books are generally, they focus on a new couple as the hero and heroine of each book. Other people may come back into the books if they've been there before. So how did you figure out who's my main characters? How am I going to start them? What am I going to have in book two to keep that little bit of a continuity from book one? So tell me all.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because it's kind of a a organic work in progress, and I started off with building a story Bible, like a lot of people do. Basically, just keeping track of all the characters in the first book, which is called Northern Deception. And the heroine in that book is a polar bear scientist. I wanted to make it really obvious. This is about polar bears. So she's up there being a polar bear scientist, and the hero is the owner of one of the tourist companies, which there's three or four of them up there. I made it a fictional one, obviously, but I based it on a real company that's up there. We've taken tours with them. And so that was pretty easy to match those two up. And I made very calculated secondary characters. So in the first book, there's a polar bear mauling of the RCMP officer in town. And he became the hero of the third book. After he's all nicely recovered from his polar bear mauling and he's back to work and he's got PTSD and now he's got a painkiller addiction because, you know,
polar bear mauling
chewed him up pretty good. So he's dealing with all that. And the middle book is actually a sort of it is a Christmas story. And I really had to reach for that one because the women that I'd sort of sporadically placed throughout book one, none of them felt right for the Christmas story. I didn't like any of them. So I ended up creating a nice 20-something girl just out of law school from Winnipeg, which is where I live, in southern Manitoba. And I had her with a whole mystery surrounding her going up to Churchill and meeting one of the chefs from one of the big restaurants up there. So yeah, it's sort of, like I said, it's an organic process. You have to think about what's going to serve the story. But for me, characters always come first. And I can't really write the story until I've got my character set in my mind and I've visualized them and I've got their backstory in place and they're really real to me. And then it's like they tell me the story. And that may change.
Right.
So for instance, with the third book, with the RCMP officer who got mauled by the polar bear, I was going to match him up with the natural resources officer, who's a woman, and she was the one who saved him by tranquilizing the polar bear. And so I thought, well, that's a natural matchup. And so I got about 20,000 words into the book, and it just was not working, and it was just horrible. It was just drudgery and horrible. They were not meshing at all. Nothing was working. And then another author friend said to me, oh, that's happened to me a couple of times, that, you know, you just throw it out and just come up with someone else for him to fall in love with. And I'm like, really? It's that simple? But when I thought about it, I had one line in the first book where I mentioned an ER nurse. And I also mentioned that the owner of the cafe had a daughter. I didn't name either of those characters. But I went, oh, and I put those two together, and she became the heroine of book three, and it made sense that the ER nurse and the cop would fall in love.
Right.
So, and she could handle his painkiller addiction, and said, boom, and once I did that, the book wrote itself. So
yeah.
I find, for me, it's all about creating the characters first, and then the story follows.
Yeah, and how about naming your characters? How do you go about naming them?
Oh, that's so fun. Well, first I figure out how old they are. And then I count back to when they would have been born. If I'm really stuck, I look on baby name sites to find out what the popular names were. Which is kind of interesting because it's not always the names you think would have been popular right back then. I also like to ask my readers group for suggestions because they come up with some really good ideas too. When I was trying to name the little girl in book three, I just couldn't settle on anything that was making me happy. And so my readers group named her. They came up with Emberlyn, E-M-B-E-R Lynn. And I thought, that is so cool. That is just, you know, and bang, that was it. So we have a lot of fun. They name my dogs, they name murder victims, and it's just a fun thing that we do in my readers group.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like fun. We actually have a cat named Ember, E-M-B-E-R. Yeah, she's mercifully quiet. I think right usually now, yeah. Meowing outside my door when I'm talking. So this is a good thing. But she's the names are fun. You know, I do have a baby name book. I asked for that for Christmas like several years ago, and I had to say, I said, we're not expecting. I have four children. I'm like, we're done with kids. This is my writing. I didn't need it for my kids. The kids were easy compared to naming characters. So somehow the characters seems, I don't know, this seems a little harder to name because I have to figure out what their name is before I can even start who this person is. For me, I start with the name for my two main characters.
And you want the name to match their personality a little bit. I have two books that I'm working on right now. And so I'm working on book four and I'm working on another one. And for this other one I'm working on, I called her Evelyn because I love that name and it's kind of making a comeback.
Yeah.
But then I thought, it's too soft and I want her to be a little bit more, you know, she has a bit of a disability. I want her to be a little bit more punchy than that. So I renamed her with a stronger name and now it's working better for me. So
yeah,
I'm saving Evelyn for a different character. So yeah, you just have to kind of match them up. And I know when I was judging a contest one time and it was for an unpublished contest and the writer had, the hero's name was Bob and it was a romantic suspense and she had some really romantic name for the girl. I don't remember what the name was, but it was something like Haley or, you know, something modern. And then Bob for the hero. And so in my comments, I said, I really strongly recommend you change his name because I looked up Robert. And the last time Robert was used was something like the First World War was when Robert was popular. It just has not made a comeback, you know, and Bob.
Or a villain.
Maybe.
Sure.
Or
the old man driver down the street. Yeah.
Your grandpa, but not your romantic hero. No, Bob is just not going to cut it. So anyways, she emailed me back after she got my name in from the contest corner, emailed back and thanked me for that. So I was glad she wasn't upset. But it really is important that you match what you're trying to write about.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think too, to kind of have that, do the little bit of research about their name. One thing I love about my baby name books, it'll tell me what the origin is. You know, is it Middle Eastern? Is it, you know, from Britain? Is it from Native American? You know, what is the origin of it and the different spellings? And I find that so helpful because sometimes I'm like, okay, he can't be from X country. That's not what I pictured him. So, they're, you know, but even you think about their ancestry a little bit about it. So it's just so fascinating to be able to take those and go, okay, here's how we're going to work with that. So what about last names? This is, I had a large problem with last names. So I'll tell you how I solved it. And then you can tell me how you solve your last name. I posted on Nextdoor or Facebook local group or whatever. And I said, anyone have any old phone books? This is what I'm using now because sometimes I'll Google specifically if I need, like, I have some German characters who I need to be from Germany. So I can Google that specifically. But when I'm just looking for general, I'm like, I don't know. Smith and Jones can only take you so far.
That's right.
So where do you go for last names? How do you figure that out?
I do use the Winnipeg phone book. We're a very diverse ethnic city. And so sometimes I have used names out of the phone book. But I always look for something that sounds really phonetically that goes well. So if you've got a two syllable first name, you want, you know, three syllables for the last, or a three syllable first name, you want maybe a one syllable for the last name. So I definitely look for that. And I do look sometimes for ethnicities too.
Yeah.
I'm working on another series that doesn't have a publisher attached to it, but it's going to be more of a buddy cop mystery series. And one of the murder suspects in that is going to be Russian. So I specifically was looking up Russian names, right?
Yeah.
So that was fun. That was going down the rabbit hole that day.
I know, right?
I'm working on Natalia. I wanted to go a little deeper than that. But yeah, so
I know, because I, like I said, I'm working on this in the current series. I'm finishing book three. I hope to release it, indie publish it this year. And I need a German name. Like, no. You know, so it took me a while to really kind of, but yeah, that was a whole afternoon rabbit trail. But I got my names, and so I'm really happy with that. Okay, so let's talk about characters. How do you pick your characters? What do they talk to you? Come on, tell me all about Jody and her characters.
It's really different for every book. Sometimes I'll sit down. I'm a character first writer. And so a lot of times the characters will start talking before I kind of know what the story is going to be. So I kind of have to figure out where to put them in place. This book was a little different in that the story came first, because it was actually kind of a different idea in a way. And then when I started talking to my editor, she was like, well, can we try this? And she started giving me new ideas and new ways of doing things. And so the characters kind of followed the original idea I had for them, and who they were kind of shifted as we talked. And so it became this thing where I had to really sit down. And I created for myself a long time ago, and it's based on something Susie May Warren did. It's not a character chart or questions, but you're thinking about what drives your character. What's the black moment in their life? What is the thing they're running from? What is it they believe about themselves? And then from there, your plot starts to spin, because what you want is for the thing they're most afraid of to happen. And you want them to grow from that. And so a lot of times my characters will grow out of, okay, what is the thing you're, or the story will grow out of, what is the thing the character's afraid of? So I get to spend a week just sitting with them. That's what I do. Sit. It looks like I'm not working, but I really am.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that the truth? Sometimes I'll sit there and I'm staring off into space, and somebody, one of my kids or my husband, will say, what are you working on? I'm like, hey, you're interrupting me. I'm having a conversation with my characters in my head.
Yep. I have this great window here and a great chair over here that you can't see. And, yeah, I'll just sit and look out the window, and things will just come. I learned a long time ago, James Rebart was talking about, if you just sit still for 10 minutes and don't listen to any, it's just quiet. Mm-hmm. And it's really odd how things really do when you let yourself just get a little bored, how things really start to percolate.
Or in the shower, washing your hair. That's
right. And then I forget before I get out. So
I'll just keep repeating it. Oh, that's a really great idea. And I'll just keep thinking about it. And that usually helps. But yeah, I get some really, and sometimes I write in the morning, first thing in the morning. And so I'm often, showering is like right before I start writing. So often I'll get, oh, that's a great idea. I didn't know the story was going to go this way. This character. I'm like, woohoo.
People don't believe the story isn't yours, it's theirs. Like you're going along, I'll turn in a synopsis to my editor and I'm like, this is how the story's gonna go. And then I get halfway through and the character's like, that's not what's gonna happen, and off we go. Yep. And I don't control that.
Who can? They're like real. Yeah, I think that's the one thing that I have that happen often. And the other thing that I have happen, and maybe this is because I'm not a huge plotter. I mean, I don't know where the story's going. I know who the characters are. Like you said, I know what's keeping them apart for romantic suspense and what they have to overcome or to come together. But I don't know what's going to happen in chapter 1, 2, 3. I know they're going to meet in chapter 1. Okay, I got that part. And I know how it's going to wrap up. But sometimes I will get to chapter, 16, and I'm like, oh, that's why I wrote that in chapter 5. I really didn't know.
And it's really wild how your brain works and how your mind will do that. You've planted all these seeds that you didn't even see until, chapter 12. And it's like, oh, that's why she did that. Or better yet, when they tell you a secret and you're like, well, I would have liked to have known that in chapter 2, because now I have to go back.
Right. There's some of that. There's some of the going back. But my favorite is when, the character does something unexpected. And I'm like, oh, right. That's why they're, oh, okay. Now I understand.
Or they're talking to the other. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, and we have to go back and, like you said, and sometimes add a little bit so the reader is not like slapped inside the head, because we don't want to do that. We've all read books or seen movies where the ending, you're just like, okay, I'm a fairly intelligent reader. That came out of like left field. No clues.
Yeah, I needed something. I like it when they're talking to another character and they just drop this bomb, and you're like, "Where did that come from? I didn't tell you to say that."
Yes, yeah. Or suddenly you realize that, you know, you had a character in this situation, you're like, "Oh, now they need to go to the hospital. That was unexpected because they're not supposed to be there. You know, they're not like
Do I
hurt,
have
but
enough word count?"
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's fun. So, characters. And there was an, oh, I was going to ask you something else about characters. What was it? Jody, what was I going to ask you? She's like, "I don't know." Names. That other thing is names are
Oh,
fun. What are your witness in peril character names?
God. It's Ivy Bridges and Jacob Garcia. So they I'm a sucker for J names, and not because I'm a J name, but my editor one time is like, "You have so many J names, you need to back up," but they just keep coming. It's like I've added Jacob and a Josh and a Jason, and I'm like, I don't know. It just, you know, so I try to back off. Ivy came about because I'm trying to think of one. I haven't used an I before.
Yes, yeah, I know. And I love to think of the meaning of names and that sort of thing. Yeah, I had one in a proposal, and the editor is like, "I don't know. That's too unusual." And I wasn't super trying to be unusual, but she's like, "That's
Yeah.
too unusual, and you can't use." I was like, "Oh, okay." I didn't think it was
I,
that weird, but.
in the book before this, when I had a, the little girl's name was Emery, because Emmarie, because a friend of mine's niece was, I like, I love that name. And my editor's like, "You can't use it. Nobody knows how to pronounce it."
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. But I
yeah
love it. But
I
I love it.
know. So what did you change it to?
I think we changed it to Emily. It ended up being
Emily.
Emily, I'm pretty sure is what
Yeah,
that's three
something
books
like
ago.
that. I know.
Yeah. And I'm a fan, and people, I hesitate to say this, people might figure me out, so don't go do it. But I'm a fan sometimes of taking something about a character and looking up like what names mean that. Like
Yes.
if a character is, you know, going through something, I'll go look up what are names that relate to that. So sometimes I'll do that, and that's kind of fun because it's like a little hidden Easter egg
Yes.
later. So, and
Yeah.
random name generators when I'm really stuck. I love random name generators.
That can be weirdly fun and sometimes disturbing. Some
Well,
of the
sometimes though it can give you like a whole new character because you're like, oh, I didn't think of a character. I've never written a character named Lily, but a character named Lily for me would be different than a character named, you know, Ivy, which that was
Right.
two botanical names. But
Yes.
but you know, they're two different types of people in my brain. So, you know,
Yeah.
it might actually give me somebody completely different than I thought she was going to be.
Right,
So
right,
I
right.
had a I'm a teacher, and I try not to name my characters after students.
Yeah.
Which is hard when you've been taught for 20 years. And I had a character one time, and he insisted that his name was Lucas, which was a student I was teaching. I'm like, your name is not Lucas. It can't be Lucas. Like, you cannot, just because then they'll all think, and it, but he wouldn't speak to me. Like, the character would not behave, would not show up on the page, would not do anything until I called him Lucas. And then there he was. It was just weird. It was this
Yeah.
weird
Yeah.
mental block until, you know, I said, okay, fine, you're Lucas.
Yeah, I know. Characters are, they're so real sometimes.
And like little toddlers that want their own way.
Yeah. And you're like, no. They're like, yes, this is what
No.
I'm going to do. You're like, no. Please
Not what I
behave.
told you.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and today I've been talking with Jody Bailey and Lori Wood. You can find out more about them and their latest book in the notes for this podcast.
Northern Deception by Lori Wood. Reunions can be deadly. After a savage attack in university, Kira Summers fled to the safety of Northern Canada and her work as a polar bear scientist. But when her whistleblower brother dies in a mysterious car crash, she must return home to bury him and pack his belongings. Unaware she's carrying explosive evidence someone's willing to kill for, She has no choice but to rely on the one person she never thought she'd see again. Lucas Tanner, a widowed single father of a special needs toddler, moved to Churchill 5 years ago. As the proud owner of Guiding Star Enterprises, a wilderness tour company, he and his daughter lead a simple life. But when Kira comes crashing back into his world, he realizes God has other plans. Now Lucas and Kira must confront a merciless killer as their past and present collide in a deadly race. A race they must win if they have any hope of a future together.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.